they're supposed to be able to go back to that Salem Kaiser school and participate in athletics and do those kinds of things. Now, it doesn't always happen that way, and that's unfortunate, but you know, we work very hard at trying to make sure there's lots of opportunities for socialization so that, you know, people can, you know, the public high school experience for some of these students is really as good as we can possibly make it, given that it's a virtual online charter school.
One of the issues around charter schools is funding, with opponents accusing charter schools of getting equal funding per child without the overhead of public schools. This unobstructed flow of cash, some say, gives charters a license to be financially irresponsible, with nearly 150 of the 300 new charter schools that started the year failing. Jeff Kropf of Orca defends charters, but admits there are problems.
You know, charter schools don't have a quote-unquote tax base. They do get funding, obviously, because we're a public school. We get funding, but only through the legislature. So the Scioto School District that charters us has a property tax funding base, and they get funding both in the federal level and from the state level. So, in fact, we don't even get the same amount of money that the Scioto School District does for their students. We actually get, I think we're at 85% of what a regular bricks and mortar school gets. So in some cases, at least in Oregon, I think that, you know, bad management is part of it. And there's no, and this is one of the reasons why we have a professional management company that manages online charter schools. And yes, they are a for-profit company out of Baltimore called Connections Academy. And they, you know, they're professionals at this and very highly qualified. Everybody in their company that's on the educational side of things, maybe not the IT side, but the educational side, Don, are all former professional educators from traditional public education. And so they have a very high commitment to a high operating standard and doing things the right way. With small charter schools that maybe get started up, those are local boards, and maybe it's a couple of local teachers who want to start a charter school that specializes in this or that. And maybe they don't always have the best training, and that's where charter school associations can be helpful.
Meanwhile, the Center for Education Reform ranks Oregon's charter school laws the 21st weakest in the nation out of 41 states. This is not to say that all charter schools do not work. Well-run, well-funded, and well-managed charters absolutely do work. They're just in the minority. Margaret Raymond, a fellow with the libertarian-based Hoover Institute, showed that a few hundred of the nation's 6,400 charter schools succeed, in part from government accreditation. This works as an engine that drives quality schools in part by attracting the celebrities and philanthropists that bring positive attention, prestige, and eventual success to a school. But have charter schools helped make some public schools better?
Reporter Emma Brown said on her 2012 story, "Gone are the days when public schools could sit back and wait for students to show up on the first day of class. In this year of school choice, families have become consumers and educators have become marketers." Brown says charter schools are forcing traditional schools to think of families as customers.
That is a sentiment shared by Christina Martin, an analyst with Oregon's Cascade Policy Institute, a free market, limited government think tank, member of the Conservative State Policy Network, and an ALEC partner. Like a third political party, Martin says charter schools are putting a do-or-die pressure on public schools that she thinks is making them better.
Because public schools see kids leaving with money, it's expensive to lose kids, so you have to do better. You have to. And where there's a challenge, people will work a lot harder to overcome that obstacle and to do better.
Brown says charter schools are forcing traditional schools to think of families as customers. Since 2008, scores of Republican and Democratic members and candidates for the Oregon legislature have received a total of nearly $50,000 in donations from K-12 and Connections Academy combined. And although much of the ALEC-inspired legislation introduced since 2011 has failed, many of those bills were reintroduced from earlier attempts. And that means vigilant voters and legislators fighting privatization efforts in Oregon can expect to see them again. This report was a collaboration between reporters Yana Maximova, Mike Klepfer, Sam Bauman, and Don Arrow. The KBOO News Director is Jenka Sadup. Here are other reports on this series at KBOO website, kboo.org.
KBOO is proud to co-sponsor the second annual Debtors Assembly Portland on Saturday, July 12th from 3 to 6 p.m. at Holiday Park, located at Northeast 11th and Holiday near the Lloyd Center MAX stop. Hosted by Strike Debt Portland, the Debtors Assembly will be a public gathering of neighbors and community leaders, seeing debt in a new way, one of social justice. Experts will speak on how the debt industries work and how they enable poverty and wealth inequality. And finally, organizers will lead group conversation on building creative ideas for local collective resistance against unjust debts. Again, at Saturday, July 12th at 3 p.m. in Holiday Park. More information may be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
To you, the 9-to-5-er, just making your way home. To you, the all-night driver, out in your cab alone. To you, waiting for lunch break, as the minutes drag so slow. Take courage, turn the volume up. It's Labor Radio.
Holla. Welcome to the Coalition of Black Trade Unionists segment of Labor Radio here on KBOO, where the heart of the community comes alive 7 days a week. My name is Tina Turner Morfitt. I am a member of the American Federation of State, County, and Municipal Employees and the current president of the Coalition of Black Trade Unionists. As usual, tonight I'm joined with my sisters in the struggle.
Good evening. I am Dr. Terrell, President Audrey Terrell, President of the Portland NAACP, and also retired from the International United Auto Workers.
Good evening. This is Deborah Hall from the American Federation of Teachers.
Tonight our segment returns to a discussion regarding Nigeria and the abduction that occurred nearly in the early hours on April 14th of 2014. We do have a program note change. We anticipated that Mrs. Pamela Obama was going to be able to meet with us tonight, but she was unable to. So in her stead, her husband, President Prince Vitalis Obama, has joined us again. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Thank you for having me again.
So, as a reminder to our listeners, our topic tonight, again, we're going to talk about the 300 girls that were attending the government secondary school, Chibok, who were kidnapped by Boko Haram. The kidnappers have threatened to sell the girls into slavery if the government doesn't meet its demands. Right now, they're demanding a prisoner swap. And the president, Goodluck Jonathan, is being resistive towards this. Tonight, we're going to discuss the impact of the abduction on education, new attacks that have happened since then, new abductions, and an arrest in connection to the abductions. So again, we welcome the return of the current president of the Nigerian community in Oregon and Southwest Washington, Prince Vitalis Obama. Once again, President Obama, please tell our listeners about your organization.
Thank you very much. Again, my name is Prince Vitalis Obama. I'm the president of the Nigerian community in Oregon and Southwest Washington. This association has been in existence and was established in 1985 to fund and engage in activities to meet specific goals and objectives of our Nigerian community here. So, since the abduction of the girls in Nigeria, we have been active out there with our American friends and colleagues to make sure that the word is out that these girls are out there and they haven't been released yet. So our struggle and our effort continues until all the girls return back to their families.
Okay. Well, it's been more than 80 days since Boko Haram abducted the girls from the Nigerian school. What has the president done about these abductions, about this abduction?
Well, you know, as you know, we are all here in America. The most of the information we get in is second-hand information. And as far as I know, they have located where the girls are. And it looks like the girls are safe. But because of the sensitivity of the whole thing and the negotiations involved in it, they're being very covert about the whole thing. More information is not really coming, but the good news is that where the girls are have been known and they are safe. It's just the Boko Haram and the Nigerian government are still negotiating on how to release those girls because the Nigerian government doesn't want to use force for the fear of killing the girls. So there is no point wanting to save the girls and then end up killing them. So that's the dilemma they're having back there now. But really, I'm optimistic and I trust that the Nigerian government will do the right thing. My thing is that it's taking too long. It's taking too long. It has been. It could have been done by now, but we see. I trust that at the end, they will do the right thing and get the girls home free and safe.
Thank you for being here again with us, President Obama.
Thank you.
Had a quick question for you.
Yep.
The Associated Press reported that some of the girls in late June were able to escape from the original 200. Have you heard any more about that? Or
okay, you're talking about the 60 girls that
yes.
Uh-huh. I got that news too, that the 60 girls escaped while the captors went to fight a war. That's how it was reported. But those 60 girls have returned back to their family safely. But the logistic on how these things happen still unknown. But the information we're getting is that the captors left to fight some of their war, and some of these girls, about 60 of them, left and returned to their homes.
I'd just like to, there's some few things that have been happening over there, and I'd just like to elaborate on the Boko Haram's massacres of hundreds that have died in Nigeria. And this is a certain situation that has really was brought to our attention, that the weapons showed up in pickup trucks, and villagers thought Nigerian soldiers had finally come to protect them from Boko Haram. But it was a disguise. The gunmen rounded up everyone in the village center and then started shooting. Altogether, Boko Haram militants slaughtered hundreds of people in three villages in the far northeast corner of Nigeria, witnesses says Thursday, describing the latest attack by the Islamic extremist group that drew international attention for the kidnapping of more than 300 schoolgirls. Mm-hmm. Now, a community leader who witnessed the killings on Monday said residents had pleaded for the military to send soldiers to protect the area after they heard that militants were about to attack. The militants arrived in Toyota Hilux pickup trucks, commonly used by the military, and told the civilians they were soldiers and that they had come to protect you all, the same tactic used by the group when they kidnapped the girls from a school in the town of Chibok on April the 15th. We all thought they were the soldiers whom we earlier reported to that the insurgents might attack us, said the community leader, who spoke on condition of autonomy because he feared for his life.
Mm-hmm.
After the militants forced everyone into the village centers, they began to shoot. Allahu Akbar. Is that it? They say Allahu Akbar. Mm-hmm. Then they started to fire at the people continuously for a very long time until all who had gathered were dead. He said Allahu Akbar means God is great.
Mm-hmm.
Now the killings took place in the villages of Danjira, Akapala, and Tagara, part of Gowaza District in Borno State. Then the community leader said he fled to Maiduguri, the Borno State capital, adding that some who escaped the massacre crossed into the neighboring country of Cameroon, while others remained trapped in the mountainous region. They still see the gunmen going back, attacking villages and hamlets by setting them on fire, he said. He said, managed to survive because I was going around to inform the people that the soldiers had come and they wanted to address us. As people were fleeing, other gunmen lurked outside the villages on motorcycles and they mowed them down. The slaughter was confirmed by a Mohammed Al-Adoum, a senator representing Borno, whose hometown is in Gowaza, and by a top security official at Maiduguri, who insisted on autonomy because he isn't allowed to speak in the media. It took a few days for survivors to get word of the massacres to Maiduguri because travel on the roads is extremely dangerous and phone connections are poor or not even in existence. So in another incident, all these incidents that are still occurring over there, gunmen killed 45 people of Bagara village on Wednesday after gathering them in front of the village mosque, and witnesses said, "We were scared because we knew that they were Boko Haram members." And Abu Ayel, a witness who escaped the attack. The gunman, who arrived at 9 p.m., told the people they were there to preach Islam and not kill, and then asked them to go to the village mosque. As soon as the men gathered there, the militants opened fire, chanting Allah Gubar. Yell and the others were escaped, hid in the bush the whole night, and returned to the village in the morning. The houses in the village were set ablaze, and the livestock was stolen. In Borno State, militants attacked Al-Jarno, a village near Chibok, where the girls were kidnapped and destroyed, according to Bogo Bitris, a Chibok community. People heard the gunshots as the firefighters were approaching, and they were able to get away. They were able to flee. Nadum said the military has assured the Borno State governor that it will dispatch soldiers immediately. It is sad that we have to wait until now that people are being killed for government to take action, he said. Soldiers of the Nigerian army have been overstretched in both human and material capacity. Calls placed by the Associated Press to Defense Headquarters spokesman Chris Alagate, mobile phone didn't connect. An email sent to him seeking comment wasn't answered. Calls to presidential spokesman Ruben Abati also didn't connect and didn't immediately respond to an email seeking comment. Nigeria's military has insisted that a big influx of troops and a year-old state of emergency in Borno and two other states have the insurgents on the run. But soldiers have told the AP that they are outgunned, they are outnumbered by the insurgents, they don't have bulletproof vests and are not properly paid and have no forage or food. So Boko Haram, which wants to establish Islamic State in Nigeria, has been taking other villages in the northeast, killing and terrorizing civilians and political leaders. Thousands of people have been killed in the five-year-old insurgents, more than 2,000 so far just this year. And an estimated 750,000 Nigerians have been driven from their homes. So the Gizawa district, where Monday's attack took place, is a regional political center whose imam was killed last week in a Boko Haram ambush on his convoy. Imams are religious and traditional leaders who have been targeted for speaking out against Boko Haram's extremists. So in Borno, Governor Kashim Shamida traveled on Saturday to Gizawa to pay his respect to the slain imam and was quoted in a local media report as saying it was a terrifying 85-mile ride. A Nigerian journalist in the convoy escorted about 150 soldiers counted at least 16 deserted towns and villages along the way. In London, British officials announced that they will host a meeting on June the 12th to discuss to improve regional coordination and tackling this Boko Haram terrorism. This session will be attended by the Nigerian Foreign Minister Umar Bashir Wali, as well as envoys from Nigerian neighbors. Benin, Chad, Cameroon, Nigeria, plus the United States, France, Canada, and the European Union. So it continues to be concerns over there. I mean, and people are still being killed. And yet beyond the fact of the girls being missing, they're still doing things to harm these people. And there should be something done as soon as possible. But we're not hearing anything over the media. And that's a concern for us.
Yes, Madam President, you are correct. All I can say that this Boko Haram, they're a bunch of cowards. They're a bunch of cowards. You can see that what they do is they go to villages and terrorize the villagers who are helpless and powerless, and do what they need to do in order to advance their agenda. In order to advance their agenda. So, I mean, if they are real men, that they are not cowards, there's no need for them to go to villages and shoot and kill girls, women, people that don't have arms. They need to go to the government, go to the military, and fight the military, and then address their agenda. So I am really, I don't know if I can say upset and angry and ashamed of the whole thing that is going on in my home country, but something has to be done as soon as possible. It's getting too long. This needs to stop. And my thing is, we have some of these foreigners that went there to help. The US is there, the Britain is there, the Chinese, the Japanese. And lately, I haven't heard anything from them on how they're advancing the whole issue. So, but I am really hoping and have faith in the Nigerian government that sooner or later they will surely do something about this and arrest the situation.
Oh, we hope so. Yes.
So, President Obama, you and I discussed earlier today that you lived in Nigeria. You lived in the southern portion.
Yes.
Can you explain to our listeners what the difference is from the villages that Boko Haram has been terrorizing versus where you lived when you were in Nigeria?
Okay. Well, in Nigeria, where I live in Nigeria is in the southern side, which is dominantly Christians. And the northern part where the Boko Haram have been terrorizing is the north, and is mostly Muslim. And that's where they're doing all these crimes and are trying to advance their agenda. And they are doing this to their people, because they are also the northerners, mostly the Hausas, we call them. And most of the killings have been done to the Hausas, the northern part. And it's amazing how people can kill their own people just to advance their agenda. And the agenda they're advancing, they want to make Nigeria an Islamic state, which can happen.
Sure.
The only way it can happen is Nigeria can be divided.
Now, it's my understanding that there are other notables in the Muslim religion who have really come down on the Boko Haram.
Yes.
And have indicated that while they have a right to want to expand their religion, how they're going about it is in a very deceitful and very terroristic way.
That's right. And I must first state that Muslim, for most of the part, is a very peaceful religion. Muslim is a very peaceful religion. It's just those few people that are very extreme, the extremists that are portraying this act. So let's not condemn Muslim as a violent religion, because it's not. I have a lot of Muslim friends. I have a lot of Muslim business people and things. They are very peaceful. And Muslim is a very peaceful religion. It's just these few bad apples that is giving them the bad name.
Mm-hmm. President Obama, what does it mean when they say Allahu Akbar? When the militants forced everyone into the village centers and they began to shoot and they screamed Allahu Akbar, Allahu Akbar, what does that mean?
I think it means God is great. Mm-hmm. God is great, you know. I'm not fluent in Hausa because in Nigeria we have different kind of languages.
Oh, I see.
We have the Yorubas, we have the Hausas, and we have the Igbos, and that's Hausa.
Okay.
Yeah.
For those of you who are just joining us, this is the Coalition of Black Trade Unionists segment of Labor Radio. And once again, our discussion is about the Boko Haram abduction of the 300 Nigerian girls. And our guest tonight is President Prince Vitalis Obama. And again, we are very thankful that you are joining us again, because we don't hear anything in the Western news about what's taking place. Mm-hmm. So again, thank you very much for keeping hope alive by coming on our show.
Thank you for having me.
Thank you, McGann. And just one final question. Mm-hmm. In the information that we were reading too, it says that an area development association is calling upon the United Nations for further help. Is that still the case?
Mm-hmm. Nigeria is really calling on the international community to help with this situation. Because, you know, this situation, I think, personally, I think is very sensitive and political for the Nigerian government. And because of the life involved with the girls, they don't want to use force to end up killing the girls, then it won't be any help anymore. So it's a very delicate issue that they are really working on a thin line here to make sure that there is a resolution, peaceful and safely one. So hopefully, it's frustrating that it's taking too long. It's taking too long for these girls. They really need to bring back the girls home.
In our discussion earlier, we were also talking about kind of a ripple effect of mm-hmm. what's happened with education. Can mm-hmm. you again remind our listeners what's taking place as far as education and from the aspect of the children and the families?
Yeah, it looks like from that part of the country, the northern part, of course, when you hear that kids go to school and they were taken and they haven't been home since the thing, you get afraid to go to school. So education is on trial for per se now in that part of the region, because the kids are really scared to go to school, and the parents, you wouldn't like to leave your kids to go to school and then come back without the kids. Yeah, so education is really being hampered in that area.
There was one other thing that I had when I was mentioning some of the things that are going over. There is a scheduled World Economic Forum
mm-hmm.
that's going to be next week. So I just want to elaborate that. Hopefully the world
mm-hmm. Where is that going to be happening?
It said it's going to be, Nigeria is hosting the World Economic Forum next week, and while the country's chairmanship was intended as a moment to celebrate its growing economic power, a major bomb blast in the capital and the kidnapping.
I think that summit has been held.
Okay, it's been held already,
yes,
okay.
I think it has been held, and it was a good participation and everything went well.
Okay. Yeah. Oh, okay. Also here, on the... there has been something done. Nigerian missing girls, the troops arrest businessmen in connection with the Boko Haram abduction in Madagura, Nigeria, on June the 30th. Nigerian troops have arrested a businessman suspected of being at the head of Boko Haram intelligence network that helped plan the abduction on more than 200 schoolgirls in the Northeast military on Tuesday. So there has been an arrest.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
You know, the man had helped the Islamic militant group plan several attacks, including the killing of, of course, I had mentioned earlier, the ruler, traditional ruler, the Emir of Gaza.
Mm-hmm.
Two women were also arrested as part of the investigation, of whom was accused of coordinating payments to other operatives. A year all intensive military operation against Boko Haram has so far failed to crush the rebels who struggle for an Islamic state in largely Muslim northern Nigeria. Nigeria has killed thousands since it was launched in 2009. So the insurgents has destabilized much of the northeast of Africa's top oil producers and biggest economy. The abduction in mid-April of the 276 schoolgirls, 219 of which remain in captivity, has become a symbol of the government's powerlessness to protect civilians from attack. Defense spokesman Major General Chris Okele said in a statement that the arrested man used his membership of a pro-government vigilant group as a cover while remaining an active terrorist. The general also said the man had coordinated several deadly attacks on Magari since 2011, including on customs and military locations. So violence has been relentless in northeast Nigeria in particular, with 100 killed in the past several months. So on Sunday, the Jibba community was attacked again in places. So militants opened fire on churches, homes, and killing. So there has been one arrest. And a couple of women was also involved in that.
You know, Madam President, there has been a lot of work done by the Nigerian government. But unfortunately, it's not enough. It's not enough. There have been a lot of work by the government. There have been a lot of arrests. And they just concluded an investigation into the whole process. The government just completed it. But the report hasn't been open yet to the public. Mm-hmm. So it's not like the government is just sitting down, not doing nothing. Mm-hmm. They're doing something. But because of the political sensitivity of the whole thing, they're being very careful.
So President Obama, you and I were talking earlier, and you were telling me about a celebration coming up, an Independence Day celebration. You want to remind our listeners about what's taking place?
Yes, thank you, Tina. This has been going on for years since the establishment of the Nigerian community in Oregon and Southwest Washington. Every year,